Good evening. Let's call to order the Housing and Human Services Commission meeting of January 6, 2026 at 7 p.m. The city does not tolerate disruptive behavior in our meetings. Sunnyvale prides itself on the rich diversity of our residents. We are committed to creating a culture of belonging where members of our diverse community feel included, safe, and respected. The Housing and Human Services Commission meeting is considered a limited public forum, which means the Commission can regulate the time, place, and manner of speech. Speaker comments must be limited to the agenda item being considered by the Commission for consent calendar or public hearing items. Speaker comments during oral communications must be limited to matters within the Commission's authority, generally referred to as within the Commission's subject matter jurisdiction. If a speaker's comments are not related to an agenda item, the presiding officer will rule the speaker out of order. A speaker will not be ruled out of order because of a disagreement with the content of their speech. Location and online meeting details are available on the Housing and Human Services Commission agenda. Use the Show Captions button to view captions on Zoom. Comments on matters not on the agenda must be submitted prior to the time I call the item for oral communications. Comments on agenda items must be submitted prior to the time I've closed the public hearing on the agenda item. Speakers are requested to keep their comments to the time period set for public comments for the agenda item, which will be strictly enforced. Guidelines are posted on the city's website and on the Housing and Human Services Commission meeting agenda. Now, please join me in the salute to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all.
Reporting officer, may we please have the roll call?
Yes, Commissioner Shen.
Present.
Chair Friedlander.
Present.
Commissioner Duncan.
Present.
Commissioner Weiss.
Present.
Vice Chair Rivera.
Present.
And Commissioner Davis. We have five commissioners present with Commissioner Stewart absent.
Thank you. Commissioner Stewart's absence is excused for tonight. Okay, time for oral communications. This is now the public's opportunity to address the commission on topics not listed on tonight's agenda. The section is limited to 15 minutes and may be extended or continued after the public hearing's general business section of the meeting. Individuals may only speak once during oral communications. This Housing and Human Services Commission meeting is a limited public forum, and the commission can regulate the time, place, and manner of speech. Speaker comments during oral communication must be limited to matters within the commission's authority, which is known as the commission's subject matter jurisdiction. If a speaker's comments are outside the commissioner's subject matter jurisdiction, the presiding officer will rule the speaker out of order. This allows the commission to conduct its business in a reasonably efficient manner and protect the rights of other speakers. A speaker will not be ruled out of order because of a disagreement with the content of their speech. Please submit a speaker card to the recording officer, raise your digital hand now, or dial 9 on a telephone to indicate you wish to speak. I will call on members of public participating in person first, followed by remote participants. Do we have any individual?
Yes, we have one, Chair.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Speakers will have 3 minutes to speak. Alpana Agarwal, sorry if I mispronounced your name.
Alpana, feel free to move the mic close. Yeah.
Thank you.
To my height. Is that better? Yeah. Good evening, Chair and Commissioners. My name is Alpana Agarwal. I am the co-founder of Helping Hands Silicon Valley. We are a nonprofit working directly with people experiencing homelessness in Sunnyvale. We provide short-term motel stays, basic needs support, and intensive one-on-one mentoring to help people stabilize and move towards self-sufficiency. I'm here today to highlight the critical gaps in Sunnyvale's homelessness response, starting with the one that directly affects health and safety, the inclement weather response. Each year, cold, rain, heat put unhoused people at serious risk. Short stays of 5 to 7 days during these periods are a proven way to prevent weather-related harm and medical emergencies. Sunnyvale's current inclement weather plan provides 10 motel rooms. While helpful for those 10 individuals, it addresses less than 3% of the need and does not meaningfully reduce the risk across the community. Helping Hands fills part of this gap. We have been providing motel rooms during inclement weather for the last 3 years. In 2025 alone, we provided motel safety stays to 23 unique individuals for a total of up to 94 nights over the year. But as a small nonprofit, we simply cannot meet the scale of this need on our own. There is also no targeted plan for single women who face disproportionate safety risks, especially during winter months. A rotating shelter model in partnership with local faith communities could provide immediate protection for women who are currently left with no safe indoor option. This is not a marginal issue. This is important. A large share of Sunnyvale's unhoused residents have no indoor refuge when the weather turns dangerous. Second, I wanted to bring up the safe parking program, a low barrier option for people living in vehicles. I don't know where it is right now, but it seems that the city has left the program behind due to various reasons. Nearly one third of Sunnyvale's unhoused population lives in vehicles. Safe parking should be a priority, not an afterthought. Finally, Sunnyvale has no local congregate shelter for single adults. When the former county operated single adult shelter transitioned into a family shelter, more than 100 adults were displaced back into the streets, and no replacement shelter was created. We think Sunnyvale can do better. Cities like Mountain View and Palo Alto have implemented tiny homes, safe parking programs, and they are much smaller than Sunnyvale. We have the resources and partnerships to strengthen the weather response. I urge this commission to lead on these urgent gaps, not only to protect life and dignity, but also to build a system that actually meets the scale of need. Thank you for listening to me.
Thank you, Alpana. I think we have a question from...
Yes, I have a question. I have a few questions. Thank you for your presentation. I was surprised to find out that Helping Hands actually can provide motel rooms.
Yes.
And the number you provided seems to exceed what the city has provided. How do you get funding for that?
So we are community funded, and we write a grant to District D3, Supervisor Ottolie's office every year, and we receive a grant from them. And whatever we run over the grant, which we do, we are community funded.
Well, so do you have money left then? Because you've already expended a lot of money.
So the grant is on a June through July thing.
Okay.
So we just received the grant for 25-26. And but yes, we finished the community, the D3 grant, urgent grant, and we end up dipping into our own funds. But we think, and this is not only for inclement weather, the motel rooms we provide are also due to sickness, you know, people who are having surgery, they need a few days to recover. They are fighting the flu. They are, you know, just needs a place to recover. We provide motel rooms if somebody is starting a job and needs a place to shower and rest before their interview or the first day at work.
Well,
yeah.
Have you applied to the city of Sunnyvale for any grants or?
No. So last year I started the process, but one of the key requirements was to have a audited set of books. While IRS does not require us to audit our books because we are a small nonprofit, I think you need more than a certain amount of budget. The city had that specific line item and we couldn't apply. So
that's the only reason you couldn't apply to
that. That was one of the reasons, yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
Thank you. Thank you. We do what we can.
Yeah. There's one other thing I want to ask you about, because I was speaking with some of the people at the library, and one of the women there was a victim of abuse. I don't know if you can, and she was afraid to talk to anyone, specifically men. And I don't know if it's your capacity or capability to refer such a person somewhere. She's clearly traumatized.
Yeah, so we can talk offline and you can
Okay.
point her out to me. We do talk to each of the people at the library one-on-one every Saturday and during our food service, and we try to get as much information from them as they are willing to share, and then refer them research on our own where can we send them, and we try to send them and connect them to other organizations who might be better suited to help them.
Wow, thank you so much. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
Commissioner Duncan.
Yes, thank you for the presentation. And you mentioned safe parking and congregate shelter. Is that does Helping Hands have capabilities in those areas?
We do not have land to provide safe parking. But given the opportunity, we could probably rise to the occasion and bring together our volunteers and do
You have
it.
capabilities in congregate shelters?
I mean, I don't know. I think it needs a much bigger organization to have the level of staff to maintain that.
So you were pointing out needs in Sunnyvale.
Yes,
Okay, thank
that
you.
was, yeah.
Commissioner Riviere.
Hi, yes, thank you for your presentation and your service to the community. Also, a question on is there an estimate about how many individuals have been supported by programs and services as a whole?
Since we started about 4.5 years ago, so we have assisted over 300 people. And currently, we have 141 people who come for meals. But our case services are usually 30 to 40 people that we are mentoring actively. Yeah. But food we provide to, we have 140 some unique individuals have come in the last 6 months.
Thank you.
Do any of the, oh, yes. Commissioner Shen.
Thanks a lot for the question. So you mentioned like last year you couldn't apply for the government funding, right? So do you think you can apply this year, or do you think there's anything we can help to help you to apply this year?
So I think I brought it up with Amanda also a few months back that the requirement for audited books should be based on the budget and not just like a blanket thing that you need audited books. But yes, we can get our books audited. We have everything in order. It's just something that we don't want to spend money on right now, preferably.
Thank you.
Okay, does thank you. Oh yes, I didn't see your speaker pressed.
Can I ask a question of staff? Oh, I just wanted to know what is the status of the safe parking program? Are you able to talk about, there's two-pronged approach. There's a nonprofit and the, yeah.
There's actually a few prong approach. So last year when we brought the ordinance to council, we were directed to look at the feasibility of like a city sanctioned safe parking site, including the cost and actual sites that could be for potential use and to bring that back. We're still in that phase right now of seeking a viable site in the city. And so that is something that we are actively working on and have continued to actively work on, is looking at the public sites that are within the city of Sunnyvale. We also have a $100,000 in city funding that council approved, and that is for a safe parking capital grants program. That opened in September. We have yet to have any applicants. It allows for $5,000 to $50,000 in grant funding that one could apply for as a community-based organization. And it would be for one-time capital funding. So if somebody had a site, but they needed to repave it or restripe it, to pay our permitting fees to receive a safe parking permit, for fencing, video cameras for safety, any number of those types of things, or collectively them all together, up to $50,000, one would be able to apply simultaneously as they're seeking a safe parking permit with us. So that is available. Now that I have our amazing unhoused specialist, Jocelyn, on our team, she's really been hitting the ground running with starting to create more robust outreach for that program, really connecting and doing warm connections with our faith-based community and building those relationships and our community-based organizations that we may not just have a relationship with yet. And so I think that will make a difference in terms of getting people to apply for safe parking, because we're really looking at, you know, it would be a lot stronger if it was a public-private partnership and not the city doing it on its own, given the struggle to find a site that is viable. So we're working on a lot of things behind the scenes. It may not look like it, but those are the types of activities that that my team and myself have been working on.
Can I make a comment? Just so I lately found out that the churches specifically have to buy increased, and there's some insurance and liability issues that they need a lot of money for. And that if it's not just capital investment, then maybe city could look into that they can fund the few years of extra insurance payments and stuff. I was talking to a pastor and that's what they said, that they cannot let anybody sleep there.
Thank you for that.
Thank you, Alpana. Okay, does anyone else want to speak under oral communications before we hear from remote speakers?
Nobody in person, Chair.
Thank you. Because of the nature of remote communications, speakers who are ruled out of order will not be given another chance to speak on this item. Therefore, speakers are warned to limit their comments to subjects that fall within the Commission's authority to decide or take action. Recording Officer, do we have any remote participants wishing to speak on oral communications?
Not at this time.
Okay. I will go ahead and close oral communications. I will go ahead and open public comment on consent calendar items. Please submit a speaker card to the recording officer, raise your digital hand now, or dial 9 on a telephone to indicate you wish to speak. I will call on members of the public participating in person first, followed by remote participants. Speakers will have 3 minutes to speak. Are there any in-person speakers?
No.
Okay. Is there any remote speakers?
Not at this time.
Okay. Thank you. I will close public comment. I will now ask for a motion from my colleagues. Commissioner Duncan.
I move that we approve the consent calendar for the meeting minutes from November 24, 2025.
Thank you. Is there a second? Commissioner Riviere?
We'll second the motion to approve the consent calendar.
Okay. Is there discussion or advocacy on the motion? I'm seeing none. Recording officer, please conduct a roll call vote.
Yes. Commissioner Weiss?
I abstain.
Commissioner Shen?
Yes.
Commissioner Duncan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Rivera?
Yes.
Chair Friedlander?
Yes.
The motion carries with 4 commissioners voting yes, Commissioner Weiss abstaining, and Commissioner Stewart and Davis absent.
Thank you. Moving on to our next item, which is 26-0127. Is there a staff report?
Good evening. My name is Matt Hazel, Sunnyvale's Housing Programs Analyst. The topic of discussion is the review of 2 draft requests for proposals, one for CDBG capital projects and economic development programs for fiscal year 2026-27, and the second for a home-funded tenant-based rental assistance program for fiscal years 2026-27, and 2027-28. The City of Sunnyvale receives two annual entitlement grants from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, the Community Development Block Grant, or CDBG, and the Home Investment Partnership Program Grant, or HOME. With these grants, as well as program income from past loan repayments, each year the city solicits proposals from local organizations to use a portion of these funds to support eligible housing and community development services or projects within the Sunnyvale community. The request for proposals sets the expectation for the types of public services, public service programs, and capital projects that are eligible for CDBG or HOME funding from the city, and lays out the city's processes for evaluating and ranking proposals and determining award amounts. The city anticipates receiving a CDBG grant of about $1 million and a HOME grant of $350,000 from HUD for program year 2026, beginning this upcoming July. The city estimates approximately $700,000 of the CDBG entitlement funds will be available for capital projects and economic development activities, RFP. This application is released every year and acts as a request for proposals from community organizations to operate any of a range of allowable activities, including affordable housing development and rehabilitation and economic development activities that stabilize or provide technical assistance to microenterprises, retain businesses or permanent jobs, and many other examples. The city also wishes to continue its impactful tenant-based rental assistance, or TBRA program, estimating $1 million of home funds will be available for this RFP for each of the next 2 years for a total of $2 million. This includes the majority of the $1.5 million of home ARP funds received in 2021. The TBRA program assists households at risk of or experiencing homelessness by providing rental assistance so that their share of rent equals 30% of their income, as well as security deposit assistance and utility allowances. Participants receive assistance for up to 2 years and receive case management services to become self-sufficient by the end of the program. The actual amounts of funding for program year 2026 and 2027 may be more or less than these estimates, depending on federal appropriations, the city's adopted budget in May of each year, and the city's receipt of program income. Final award amounts are proposed in March 2026, while we usually get the official notice of allocations from HUD around April. The city plans to release the RFPs tomorrow, January 7th, 2026, as shown in the timelines in both attachments, unless there are recommended changes to the schedule. The staff recommendation is to review the draft RFPs and provide any comments or suggestions for any changes to the final RFPs. A formal vote on the suggested changes is not required, because these are administrative documents. So this RFP review is the final opportunity for the commission to make modifications prior to the current planned release date. Thank you very much. I can address any questions or feedback that you might have.
Thanks for the staff report. I will now ask for questions from my colleagues. Commissioner Stewart, I see you pressed first. I'm sorry, Weiss.
I believe Commissioner Riviere was ahead of me.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay, thank you.
It doesn't matter.
Thank you for the staff report in detail. A question on the policies broken out into the types of rental assistance, including for individuals with disabilities. It says procedures for reasonable accommodation. Is there a definition on the reasonable accommodation piece as a whole?
Where did you say you see that?
So under the, where it says existing policy housing element, goal H5, under each 5.6 and H5.11, it talks about reasonable accommodation. Is there a definition for reasonable accommodation?
Is that out of the housing element? I think that term is out of the housing element, and we use the HUD definition.
Okay, thank you. And in kind of in terms related to, is it broadly connected to the type of facility, or is it related to the individual's condition or circumstances?
It sounds like you're looking at the council, the related council policies, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, on the report, yeah.
Yes. So what staff does each time we write a staff report is that whatever content that we're writing, we loop it back to any existing city policies and show how the work that we're doing relates to any of the existing policies that the city has. So in particular, with the reasonable accommodation process, that's related to housing. And so we opted to include the housing for persons with disabilities in relation, that policy in relation to this work that we're doing here because of the TBER program. So it relates directly to housing for persons with disability. And so that sort of the reasonable accommodation aspect of that is just one piece of how we would work to ensure that we have housing for persons with disability. But in relation to this, we're more focused on the TBER program itself.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Commissioner Weiss. And sorry before you came up as Commissioner Stewart on the computer.
Thank you, Chair. In reading page 2 of 5, CDBG eligible activities, that section does not mention that it is focused on LMI households. I believe it is, but in that section, it doesn't. And when it goes on to talk, it gives examples for economic development activities. It has 3 examples there and then additional eligible economic development activities. I don't see that it is really zooming in on lower income families when you talk about assistance to a private for-profit business, economic development. Micro enterprises. Could you explain further how this is going to help low income and moderate income families, since it's not that specific?
Yeah, in the report, we try to list all of the available activities that could be funded with this CDBG funding. HUD asks that 70% of both grants assist low income households, but doesn't ask that each activity specifically assists 70% low income. So a small program could assist specifically businesses or job placement without the direct goal of assisting only low income households. But we look at it at a large scale that out of all households assisted, that we meet that qualification. Within economic development, a lot of micro enterprises, you can make that a specific goal of the activity to help those.
Yeah, I would appreciate it being more focused because it says, and further down, community economic development activities that increase economic opportunity, stimulate or retain businesses. It would be good if somewhere in here it would mention family businesses so that we're not just helping another Chick-fil-A or something. So that's one of my concerns, that it could be misconstrued. But you look at the total number, and then you make sure that 70% of the total amount of money that's granted will benefit LMIs.
So in our staff report, Matt really worked to guide and show what CDBG can be used for. But in the attachments, which are the actual RFPs that will be released, we really highlighted that the focus is on serving low to moderate income people. And I think we may even grade on that too, in terms of the scoring process when we're pulling those proposals. We're reading those proposals after they're submitted. So in the actual RFP documents, we do highlight that that is what our goal is with that funding.
Okay, so not necessarily in the documents that we received.
It's, I believe the RFPs were the attachments to the report.
I saw the schedule and I saw the scoring sheets. The deadlines.
Yeah, attachment one CDBG of the CDBG RFP, and attachment two is the home RFP. And so those are documents will actually be released to the public tomorrow when the RFPs themselves go live. And okay. And that should stay in there. And I can double check while we move on to highlight where it says that.
Thank you. And I'm going to piggyback on what Commissioner Revere said, because making homes and facilities accessible means more than just having, for example, a first floor bedroom. It may mean modifying bathrooms, allowing access to the kitchen. The state requirements for ADA are incomplete in a lot of ways. All that they specify actually is what has to be done in the bathroom, as I recall. So when something is made accessible to someone with physical limitations, more has to be done for them. Okay, so I'm just supporting what Commissioner Revere said. Thank you.
And if I can add, I was able to look up the CDBG RFP, and in the introduction and community background, so technically, I believe page one of that document, it highlights that we are looking to create or improve housing for LMI households, creating or retaining jobs for LMI households, or providing a specific service to definite LMI individuals. So we ensure that that's where our focus is.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Commissioner Duncan.
Thank you for the report. I have several questions. I'll try to keep them brief. Says the city anticipates receiving $1 million in CDBG grants, but we're looking for proposals on $700,000. Just curious why the gap there?
The rest of the funding typically goes to admin in-house and implementing the programs, and then the public services grants that we are on
to. The human services?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. That helps. I know I am supposed to remember these things, but can you remind us what we approved in the past year or two for some of these CDBG grants, capital grants?
Yeah. So we release this RFP every year. So for the past year, it was awarded to the Work First program by Downtown Streets team, and Upwards Boost for microenterprise child care assistance.
Okay, thank you. Which sort of answers the question of why we're in a little bit of a predicament here tonight. This is an RFP, which means you're looking for proposals from community organizations. But with home, it doesn't really feel like an RFP. You're basically asking us to, I guess, basically approve that it's not What is the RFP for with home?
I would say that the home RFP acts as a request for proposals for the specific program that we want operated. So it's proposals from agencies on how, with this funding, they would implement and operate the program, this tenant-based rental assistance program.
So essentially looking for proposals for organizations to operate the program. I guess my question is, especially think back to the discussion with City Council on December, I think it was December 2nd, there was just some question as to TEBRA has been a very good program. I know this commission and myself have voted in favor of it several times, recommendations to the council, but have we considered other alternatives for the use of home? I mean, essentially to support the goals of alleviating homelessness?
So home is a little more inflexible in its uses. In the past, jurisdictions have used it for development of affordable housing. However, the awards themselves continue to dwindle. And so again, we're getting around $350,000 a year, and with the cost of affordable housing as much as it is at $40-50 million, you know, to build new, that pays for a room. And so we decided a few years ago, a number of years ago, that it would make more financial sense to, better financial sense to operate a TEBRA program instead of operating or supplying that funding for affordable housing developers, because no one was applying. So that's what we've chosen.
Kind of limited, I'm hearing we are limited in our ability to use these funds. Okay. My last question, part of on page 3, I guess it's probably attachment 1, it basically says economic development activities, providing credit for establishing expansion of micro enterprises. It mentions micro enterprises several times. I don't memorize these things, but I don't remember seeing micro enterprises highlighted in the past. Is this new from HUD, new from the city?
This language is directly out of the HUD exchange. I don't believe that it's new. We just wanted to make it clear all of the different type of activities that are allowable, so that when people are, our applicants are being submitted, they have a better understanding of what is it can be accepted.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I actually have a question as well. I'm looking at the CDBG document, and my question is whether or not the $700,000 that's expected would be split among multiple projects, or if one is expected to receive significantly more, and whether that would ultimately help better than splitting it down the middle.
That's based on what kind of applications we receive. In the past, it's all gone to one program. This past year, and we split it up between two. Largely in the past, the Work First Sunnyvale program took the bulk or the entirety of this funding. So it's just dependent on the strength and quality of the applications, what we see fit once we receive and grade those.
And thank you. And can smaller nonprofits apply for this as well? Or is how can they compete against, you know, something that's more established?
They can apply for this funding in any amount within the 700 figure. What we really wanted to grade on was, let's see, I have the... was experience and service approach. So they may not have the same size as or funding of a different agency, but approach and experience go a long way within the grading, so that I think that can level the playing field between different size organizations.
Okay. And one more question. I saw that infrastructure, public facilities, and economic development was prioritized over housing. Is that the case? Because that's it says it's prioritized for this cycle. So I was wondering why that was.
Can I ask where you see that just for the greater context of?
Yes, let me pull that back up. This would be page 2 of attachment 1, paragraph 2. It says the city is seeking to prioritize applications that support infrastructure, public facilities, and economic development activities. So I was just curious why housing was not included in this for this cycle.
We definitely entertain housing to be applied, but because we receive so few applications and from that aspect, the amount awarded, I just don't think incentivizes projects that are housing projects that can be so expensive. But
Well, would this be gap funding at that point? Because it's only 700,000.
yeah, definitely,
Okay.
and I think it just makes doesn't move the needle on as far on. On such big projects.
Okay. Thank you very much. Do any other commissioners have questions? Vice Chair Revere.
Hi, yes, appreciating the question so far and thinking about it says that the RFP information will be posted on the website. Are there other outreach strategies to encourage applications from various nonprofits or organizations as a whole in terms of communication, either through forums or other methods?
No meetings are being held besides this meeting here, but we intend to reach out to all our partner agencies that we've worked with in the past or know in the community to let them know what that RFPs are available for application.
Okay, thank you. And then it says the timeline of the application here is that they'll receive responses by a particular, let's see, time frame. Let's see, question submitted. And looking at the full timeline on the back there. Yeah, so the deadline is the 9th. And then, thank you. And then from there, is there a particular, let's see, Pride Awards? And does it say how they are notified and if the funds will be provided in specific milestones or how in general they will be provided based on specific the meeting particular goals throughout the project or all at once as a whole?
Typically, it's on a reimbursement basis, so they'll operate the program, submit expense reports to us through our grant management software, CDS, City Data Services, where they'll submit the application, and we reimburse those expenses. So it's on an as-spent basis.
Thank you.
I also wanted to add to the public outreach. We have a listserv, so we'll make sure that we get the RFP out to a number of different not local nonprofits in that way. And then we also have a few other methods that we're able to do some e-blasting and share that out so that we can get as many providers as possible, new and reoccurring, to apply for our funding.
Appreciating it. Thank you.
Commissioner Shen.
Yeah, regarding the reach out, you mentioned that like for the locals, right? So will that also be reached by providers in the other city?
Yes, we work with the county really closely, and we also are on a few email lists where we have access to all the providers throughout the county and beyond. So we'll be able to advertise there as well.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Do any other commissioners have questions? Okay. I will go ahead and open the public hearing on the specific item. Marie Bernard.
Good evening, commissioners, and thank you to Vice Mayor Sell and also to our wonderful city staff. Marie Bernard from Sunnyvale Community Services, and for two decades or more, SCS, Sunnyvale Community Services, has been receiving CDBG funding. We're the city's sole CBDO, community-based development organization, which means that the majority of our board and our operations are here in Sunnyvale, and it really makes us unique. And our mission is preventing homelessness and hunger, which is why we're so tightly drawn to this work, but also why it's so important that we continue this. We have been for the past several years, the TBRA, TBRA program administrators, and the people that are working very hard to make sure that that program remains very vibrant. It's been challenging during these times as well, because of the changes that we're seeing in the federal government happening to our residents that are hitting not only housing, but human services. And what's really scary is that so many of our clients who are entitled to receive a lot of benefits are now scared to come out for services. Regardless of that, we, and some of you already know this by being very present as volunteers, we see hundreds of families coming to us on a daily basis, and about 1,400 families coming every week for food. The TBRA program is a focused program. It's very intensive. For up to 2 years, people get wraparound services, but they're benefiting from all the other services that Sunnyvale Community Services offers. We have wraparound case management that goes beyond what even we're able to offer through the funding of the TBRA program. And that's important to note, because this local focus is something that we really guard very carefully to make sure that we are focused and using all the resources of partner agencies, including Helping Hands, whom we often host, and we're very proud to partner with them. As an aside, I would say that we would be very happy to partner with them on funding opportunities as well. I know we've collaborated with them many, many different ways on many different projects, and we're very proud of that as well. What's really important to know is that with this funding, we're going to be doing something very concentrated, but the city of Sunnyvale also is seeing that we helped over 400 families last year with housing assistance. Of those, about 40 or 50 were the households in the TBRA program. And so this is a very, very, again, focused, laser focus program for people. And we're very glad that the city has now made it possible for us to reach out to people who are at risk of imminent homelessness, as well as unhoused people. All of the people we serve are low income. They're all LMI. In fact, a majority of them are extremely low income. That's 98% of the clients are low income or extremely low income. So we're hoping that you have faith that we are going to continue to make this program vibrant and very, very much accessible to people in Sunnyvale who need it, but also that we want to partner with the city.
Thank you, Marie.
Okay. Thank you. Let me know if you've got any other questions as well as any past programs.
Do any commissioners have any questions or comments for Marie Bernard? Vice Mayor Sell.
What kind of outcomes do you see in the TBRA program?
Thank you. Well, in our homelessness prevention services in general, we have a 95% success rate in keeping people housed. That's across the county in all of our programs. With the TBRA program, we've been even more successful with that. So as people age out of the program, they have up to 24 months to qualify or to be a part of it. And what we're finding is that the clients are aging out of that quickly because they're able to sustain their rent sooner than the 24 months. So as a rolling result, we've gotten a 90 percentile rate of people staying housed. Now, of course, looking longitudinally, you know, is that the case in 2 years, 3 years out? We'd love to do more study on that as well, because that's really the sustainability of the program.
So is it that when they're on their program, they're paying like 30%, mm-hmm. and then you try to get them to a point where they can pay the full amount?
We throw everything at it. We work with NovaWorks. We work with Foothill College. We help people get to job skills. We help them make sure that they've got the access to all the benefits and services that they need so that they can get health care. So that all these things wrap around so that they can sustain their income and then build up to a market rate rent, which is the key. So in 24 months or less, they need to be able to pay a full market rent. It also means that we get people into permanent supportive housing, those rare ducks that we try to find. So folks who are entitled to those benefits, we also get them. And we have a housing specialist who works with us so that we're able to find the housing, get landlords willing to take a TPRC check, because that's not always the case. Convincing the landlords that we're behind the client 1,000%. That if there are any issues, we'll be working with the client as well as with the landlord. So it's this cultivation. And what we found is some of the TBRA landlords are then becoming landlords for other clients as well, because they see that that relationship is working. So it's building up this stable of housing in general.
So my understanding is these people are homeless at the beginning of the program.
They were this past year, but again,
are on the verge.
On the verge.
Right. And then in 2 years' time or less, mm-hmm. they're able to be on their own and pay their own rent.
The market rate.
Okay. Thank you.
And one of the things we need to do is to make sure we're building, as you all painfully know, a lot more affordable housing in Sunnyvale. This is using existing housing stock. I can't emphasize that enough. We know, as you've already heard, how much money it costs to build a single unit or to convert a place into being affordable housing. We are working with landlords and existing housing stock in Sunnyvale and also in the greater Santa Clara County, because sometimes we need to move people out of Sunnyvale in order to be able to sustain that rent. But that's a real plus, because it means they're going to be able to keep their job, keep their housing, and be successful.
We yes, have an additional question from Vice Chair Riviere.
Hi, yes, appreciating all that you mentioned about support of the program in the community. Question on if you often see a transition for individuals that are extremely low income to low income and kind of up through the tiers where they would need a smaller percentage of assistance.
That's what happens during the course of the program. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So during the course of the program, we actually take a pulse of it managing them. So every month we're checking in with them. And if their income has changed, we do check on that. And they then pay a higher percentage of their rent during that time. And that's one of the things we're seeing, is that these home funds can go very far, because we're helping people increase their income during the course of the 2 years or less. And that's real success, and it's giving them a taste of what it's going to be like to pay 30% of a higher income. And hopefully that's going to be sustained after they leave the program.
Thank you. And one last question on in building the relationships with existing landlords and properties, is there maybe one way or different types of feedback you've gotten that would make landlords more likely to accept connecting more clients?
Well, I think that the backing of the City of Sunnyvale, saying this is a City of Sunnyvale funded program through HUD, is very important. I think that sometimes they're a little bit afraid of HUD. I will say that we are seeing right now, though, there are 700 Section 8 households in Sunnyvale alone. Those are people who are getting a lifelong subsidy to pay a percentage of their rent. So TPRA is only temporary. And sometimes we're working with landlords because we're placing people in that Section 8 housing with other programs and working with the landlords to say, this is safe. This is going to be, your monthly check is going to be coming from HUD and from the client, is really important to do as well. A word of caution there, though, because we're working very closely with the county. There are new regulations in HUD that our city staff probably know about, where they're going to be checking more completely and more, I don't even want to say rigorously, but they're going to be checking on the documentation household status of everybody in the household, from every generation living in the household. And so we've been notified and actually asked by the county to take on the challenge of helping some of those families. We're one of four agencies who are going to try to transition Sunnyvale households who are in Section 8 who are at risk of being literally given over to HUD and to ICE. You know, they'll just cut and paste it. And so we're kind of trying to quickly move them out of housing. So I wish we didn't have to be such experts at this, but we are really at the leading, bleeding edge of this. And again, to point out what the city staff said, we work very closely with this, with the county. We have to, because there's so many resources there that they have. And just the exposure that our families have, these are folks who are already housed and stably housed, but they may be at risk. They're disabled, they're seniors, and they may not have the full documentation that whatever the new HUD requirements are going to be, and we don't even know what those are.
Thank you.
But we're here together. So that's what's the most important thing. And I'm so grateful to the city for doing everything and for supporting us in this incredibly important work and very satisfying work.
Thank you.
Thank you, all commissioners.
Thank you. Does anyone else want to speak on this item before we hear from remote speakers?
Not in person, Chair.
Are there any remote participants wishing to speak on this item?
And none online. No.
Okay. I will close the public hearing. I will now ask for a motion from my colleagues. Commissioner Duncan.
Sort of procedural question. Are we sure that a motion is needed?
Oh, there's no motion needed. I see.
Apologize on the script, Chair.
Okay. Okay, well, then we can go to the next portion of the agenda is for the oral reports and announcements by commissioners and staff to share information. Do commissioners have any non-agenda items or comments? Okay, Commissioner Weiss?
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. What agency or staff is responsible for giving out the vouchers for overnight stays? It seems to me it was very haphazard when I go by the library. I'm actually a pretty voracious reader, so I'm not by the library a lot. And I've become familiar with the people there. And there are days when they say, yeah, we're all waiting for a voucher from Motel. But sometimes the person comes and sometimes the person doesn't come. Do you know who's in charge?
The city has five hotel rooms. We don't have a voucher program, but we do have five hotel rooms that we have. Excuse me?
Oh, I was under the impression the city had 10.
So we have five hotel rooms that we hope operates 24/7, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. That's what we consider our non-congregate shelter program or temporary hotel program. And then we also have the inclement weather shelter beds. So that's 10 beds or 10 hotel rooms, essentially, that we have. We did it as a pilot program last year and saw that it was well utilized. And so this year, the city manager has authorized that we are able to bring those 10 hotel rooms online for those big storms that happened over the holiday break. And so that's what we did, is that. And so we hope also oversaw those 10 rooms for, I want to say it was five nights. It was like a Monday to Friday or Monday to Tuesday of the week after, actually. So,
but how does one get that then?
So we hope is our street outreach team, that we contract with, and, what their job is to do 7 days a week, typically during business hours, although they do work outside of business hours as well if there are needs. They go out to what I call hotspots. So that would be in front of the library. It would be in the downtown area and a number of other places that people experiencing homelessness are known to congregate at. And they have some of the team that are going to those places on a regular basis each week to check in with those folks, to see how they're doing, to help them call into the county's Here For You hotline, which is how one gets a shelter bed through the county's system of care. They'll help them call on their their street outreach phone if one didn't have a phone of their own to see where they are in terms of placement. And any other needs that they might have that day. So they have snack packs and water with them. So they'll also be delivering that, you know, to keep up with basic needs and then checking in with them in terms of case management. Sometimes they will also give them rides to places, maybe to a shelter or somewhere that they need to go to get their ID, et cetera. And then they have people that are also on their caseload as well, people who have agreed to do the work and that they meet with regularly, have appointments with, usually at the library, but are also open to meeting them wherever they're at. And through those appointments, they're working to essentially get them off the street to remove the barriers that they have, whether that again is getting an ID or getting to the doctor or getting on that shelter wait list or waiting for a placement in the 5-room program that they are operating as well. So those are the types of things that they're doing. So I'm not exactly sure what the individuals that you're talking to, they may be talking about a county program and that's what they're waiting for. But again, we don't have vouchers. We just have the 5-room program, which has pretty much like a zero vacancy rate. Every time that a person moves on from the program, another one's placed in there same day. Mm-hmm. And so it can take quite a while to get into that program. And then we have the 10 rooms that we just opened again for that holiday storm. That was like a week and a half ago.
But is there a regularly scheduled time that they are at the library, for example?
I think I would feel more comfortable checking in with them about that. I know they start their day at the library, some of the staff, and then they're going out to the different places. They all also have their outreach phones on them. So they generally are starting their day at the library, or sometimes they're going there in the afternoon. Again, I was able to get them space at the library in like a side room where they work out of there as an office, sort of like an office setting. It helps when it's raining, but primarily their job is to be out on the street. So they're generally outside. They don't have like an office space outside of the library.
And this outreach team works under the auspices of which agency?
We Hope.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Vice Chair Revere.
Hi, yeah, thank you for the context. Along the similar lines of questions, would the individuals have an opportunity to apply for the 24-month type programs that we talked about earlier through the case management?
Yes. In fact, they have made a few referrals to the TBRA program. So for individuals that they believe may qualify for the program. And I think we're successfully at least able to get one or two households in.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do any other commissioners have questions or comments? Okay. Well, the meeting is adjourned at 8:04 p.m., and I want to thank everyone for your participation in tonight's meeting.
Chair?
Yes?
Amanda, did you have staff comment?
I have a few comments.
I apologize.
That is okay. I won't keep us here too long. No worries. I wanted to let the commission know that we'll be bringing the family shelter study issue to council on 127. That is an information only item. So there will be no presentation on it. But as soon as those documents get posted online, we will send that over so you can read that report if you're interested. We also, during our February 25th commission meeting, we'll be bringing you an update on tenant protections, and we'll also be bringing the HUD substantial amendment for the closure of the workforce program.
And then next week, I just wanted to inform you that we will be releasing our biannual NOFA for affordable housing funds. So that will be coming to you, the commission, I believe in March, once those awards have been recommended. And then we've also started the internal planning process for the outreach efforts for the strategic plan to address homelessness. And so through February and March, we'll be really concentrating our efforts on having robust community outreach meetings, going to farmers markets. We'll have a survey. We're really getting into the fine details of exactly what we'll be doing, but wanted to let you know that work has started. That's all for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Vice Mayor Sell, did you have any questions?
Oh, I just had one thing. I thought December would be my last Housing and Human Services meeting, but I got a bonus. We council members switch every 6 months, and then so I get to come here in January too. So it's always so fun, and I'm deeply impressed with the quality of questions that the commission asks. And I think the combination with our great staff, it's great synergy, and then our community. So it's just a wonderful meeting of a lot of people that care and a lot of people that are collaborating. So I just want to thank you to the commission, the staff, and the wonderful community that comes to these Housing and Human Services Commission and does such important work for our community. So thank you.
Thank you, Vice Mayor.
Thank you, Vice Mayor.
Okay. I apologize again to staff. I did not try to skip over you. I should highlight where I left off. Now the meeting is adjourned at 8:07 p.m. And I want to thank everyone for your participation in tonight's meeting.
Thank you.